Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A recent study has ranked Ohio last when it comes to state policies and laws that support the well-being and health of undocumented immigrants. The question is, why is this relevant? That means undocumented immigrants in Ohio are less healthy, less educated, and more isolated than those in states such as California and Texas, which ranked at the top in the study. Joining us now is the Associate Director of the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research and one of the authors of the study, Stephen Wallace. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you for having me.
So what are the policy markers used in this study?
So we were interested in policies that would impact the health of undocumented immigrants living in the various states. And we're looking at a broad selection of policies. So some were public health and social benefits, including health care for pregnant women. We looked at access to higher education. We looked at labor and employment practices, driver's licensing, and the federal enforcement program Secure Communities. So each of these has an impact on the health of undocumented immigrants in both direct and indirect ways. So you can imagine if a person doesn't have a driver's license, they might find it harder to, say, drive to the doctor, but it also makes it more difficult for them to get to their work in order to make a living and support their family and other types of problems that make it difficult for them to continue to live a healthy life.
Is it a matter of what's offered or what's out there that might be punitive, or the fact that something is not offered or something that might be beneficial?
Right. So the policies we So each of these reflect a federal policy that has a series of options that states can adopt or not adopt. So the default policy for health care for pregnant women, regardless of immigration status, is not to provide federal funds for it. States can take an option that provide prenatal care for all pregnant women, and Ohio has opted not to do that. So the majority of these policies are areas where Ohio has opted not to take the flexibility allowable under federal law in each of these areas.
I read in an interview that you did with the Columbus Dispatch that you said you were surprised that Ohio was at the bottom. Why were you surprised?
Well, you know, if you look at the last several presidential elections, Ohio has been a swing state. It's a large industrial state, upper Midwest. It's not a state that you typically associate with a hostile environment for immigrants. And the company that Ohio keeps are some of the states that you see in the news, such as Arizona, which has a large immigrant population and has been very aggressive in laws that make it difficult for them to live there. Alabama, which also, sort of like Ohio, has a low proportion of undocumented immigrants, but has also used immigration status as a political issue. So the states that Ohio is at the bottom with are different types of states than at least my image of Ohio.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about state policies that address the health and well-being of undocumented residents, undocumented immigrants in Ohio and across the nation. I'm talking with Steve Wallace. He's the Associate Director of the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. He's one of the co-authors of a recent study that ranked Ohio at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to policies on behalf of undocumented residents. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to hear from an organization that opposes these kinds of policies, and we'll also be hearing from an organization in Central Ohio that supports them. Why study state policies in this way? What's your ultimate goal in understanding this better?
So as most listeners probably know, the federal government has been stuck for the last several years, for many years now, in any sort of policy change that would address the issue of the 11 million plus undocumented immigrants in our country. But there's actually a lot of action at the state level, and as is true in many policies, states are often the site where innovation first happens. So we wanted to look at how states were approaching policies that have a direct impact on the health of the undocumented population, in part to see where that variation exists, but also to be able to alert states that they have options that they can take that other states are taking that create a healthier environment for undocumented immigrants who are parents of children in the schools in your state, who are workers in the industries in each of the states, and are really part of the community. So as a public health professional, we're interested in promoting the health of everybody in communities that we live in, and this is an important segment of those communities.
Texas was ranked near the top. I think it was number two. And Arizona, as you mentioned earlier, near the bottom. They are both conservative border states with Mexico. I was surprised at that contrast.
So once again, while I was surprised at Ohio being near the bottom, I was, to be honest, also a little surprised about Texas being near the top. Mm-hmm. It was actually higher than New York, which, once again, you typically think is a liberal northeastern state. When you look at history in Texas, actually Texas has a long history of being welcoming to immigrants. Former President Bush was a leading advocate of comprehensive immigration reform while he was still in office. And the immigrant and undocumented immigrant population in Texas actually comprises a significant proportion of their labor force. So while Ohio has a small number, Texas follows California in the number of undocumented immigrants. So their economy is very dependent on the population. And as a result, there's more support for policies that help the lives of undocumented immigrants. And then there are some policies that, as they say in politics, make for strange bedfellows. So the issue of prenatal care for undocumented women attracts support from both the Right to Life community, which is concerned with the unborn child, from the immigrant community, which is concerned with the mother, and women's rights community, which is concerned with women's ability to have a healthy pregnancy. So policies like that that they've adopted actually have a fairly broad constituency in Texas as well.
Now, again, Arizona obviously has a large immigrant, undocumented immigrant, just because of its location, but it ranks very low along with Ohio in this study. But it seems like states with large undocumented immigrant populations tend to have the best policies.
So that's a
best being a value
hypothesis.
Judgment. I mean, I guess the best, yeah, in terms of on behalf of undocumented immigrants.
That was sort of our assumption going into. But when you look at the data, states like Florida, which is also among the top states in terms of the numbers of undocumented immigrants, also ranks rather low. Not as low as the Ohio and its partners, but also ranks rather low. Mm-hmm. So there's a combination of political climate, historical approaches to immigration, some of the issues around how important immigrants are in the employment sector, but there is no one factor. We did look at the number of undocumented immigrants in each state. There's no direct correlation there. Total immigrants, there's no direct correlation there. Size in the labor force, there's variation in that. You know, so if you know one state, you know one state.
Mm-hmm. And what about the impact on those laws and policies in terms of attracting more? Does it affect the influx of or not of undocumented immigrants into any given state?
Right. So
do they think about those things before they move someplace?
Of course. So the simple explanation is, if you look at the proportion of undocumented immigrants, and you look how policies affect those immigrants, there is no direct correlation. So if you were coming from Mexico or Central America and said, I want to go to the state with the best policies for me and I don't have papers, everybody would come to California. California has the best. Lots of people would end up in Texas, and nobody would go to Florida, but Florida and New York, which are actually, fairly common states for undocumented immigrants. The longer story on that is, if you think about a person who is poor living in a village in Mexico And if you ask them, gee, what state has the best health policies for somebody without papers, they're not going to know. What they're going to know is they have a cousin in Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where they're going to go when they come to the United States, and that cousin will help them find a job. And that's the route that most undocumented immigrants come into the United States.
Did you also look at, or can you talk about what the benefits are to the larger society when you have these, or the disadvantages?
Sure. So once again, we're looking at social determinants of health. So we're looking at policies that help keep populations healthy. The simplest argument is around the prenatal care for pregnant women. So while the women may not be documented residents of the United States, their children, when they're born, by the fact that they're born in the United States, are automatically citizens. So those children become eligible for Medicaid and the whole range of public programs. And there's extensive evidence, lots of studies that show that $1 invested in prenatal care saves you about $3 later on, because you catch problems early and you don't end up putting newborns into neonatal intensive care units, which can run tens of thousands of dollars a day. So you only have to avoid a couple intensive care unit days to pay for a lot of prenatal care. So that's a simple financial argument. These are also people whose children, when they're born in the United States, are U.S. citizens. They're going to schools. If their parents are sick or unable to participate fully in helping raise their families, that has a negative effect. And to the extent that communities are healthy, it does have an effect of washing over everybody, not just the undocumented, not just low-income populations, but everybody in the community benefits.
We have an email from Andrew in Clintonville. He writes, I believe that Ohio is a progressive population held back by overly conservative policies. When a person in Ohio, here legally or not, has no health care or safety net, we all pay and it drags down everybody's quality of life. First of all, I wanted you to respond to the issue of Ohio progressive but held back by overly conservative policies. You've talked about why you think it's not a deliberate act of discrimination. Why do you think it's not deliberate?
So most of the policies, so I haven't interviewed your legislators. What we can see is what's in the news, and you actually are probably in a better position to generalize than I am. But the politics and people that I've talked to who look nationally note that states like Alabama, Arizona, some of the even Kansas have used immigration as an issue to mobilize a particular segment of the electorate, and mm-hmm. so use it as a conservative rallying cry. Nobody that I've talked to has commented on Ohio politicians as explicitly using immigration or undocumented immigration in that fashion. So that's why my guess would be it's more a matter of omission than commission, that the legislators are uninterested in the issue and maybe philosophically opposed to policies that provide any benefit, whether even if it's health benefits to the undocumented, but it doesn't seem like it's being used as a wedge issue in Ohio.
And I was kind of wondering, and this goes to the population issue, there's only about 100,000 undocumented people in Ohio, roughly, we're not sure, compared to, say, was it 1.5 million in Texas and about 3 million in California? I wonder if it's such a small, it's such a drop in the barrel, it's just not noticeable.
That's definitely part of it, but there are very few undocumented immigrants in Kansas or Alabama, and it's been an issue in both of those states as well. So you don't need much of a population for a politician to raise the issue and make it a headline issue.
Well, Steve Wallace, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for having me on.
Steve Wallace, Associate Director of the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. He's a co-author of a new study that ranked Ohio at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to policies and state laws that enhance the health and well-being for undocumented residents in the state of Ohio. There's 100,000 people, roughly 100,000 in Ohio, who are undocumented immigrants. If you have a question or comment going forward, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about state rankings and how undocumented residents, immigrants, workers are treated in terms of health and well-being policies. Most of the roughly 100,000 undocumented residents in Ohio do so without health and well-being benefits for which they would otherwise qualify. That puts Ohio at the bottom of the barrel in a recent study done by UC Global Health Institute and UCLA measuring states' health and well-being policies for undocumented residents. California was at the top. We're going to talk about the differences. Joining us in the studio is counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition, Joe Mas. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
Good morning, Ann. Good being here.
And by phone is policy analyst at the UC Berkeley Labor Center, Laura Lucia. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
Laura, why should states provide health and welfare benefits to undocumented immigrants? What's the advantage, for example, to California, which has the most elaborate outlay?
Right. Well, here in California, undocumented immigrants are a really critical part of our economy and our state. They make up almost 10% of the workforce. And so, you know, many people interact every day with an undocumented immigrant. And a lot of the policies that California has introduced, for example, just this year, driver's licenses became available to all Californians, regardless of immigration status. A lot of policies like that benefit all Californians. Using the driver's license example, having everyone in the driver's license system improves safety. If everyone knows the laws and is tested on the laws, that really benefits everyone. My expertise is in healthcare, and California has gone further than most other states in terms of providing healthcare to undocumented immigrants, and having undocumented immigrants healthier means a healthier workforce. A lot of undocumented immigrants are part of families with citizens and legal immigrants. And so, you know, California residents, you know, of all immigration statuses benefit in that way when their family members are helped. Research has shown that providing health care can improve educational outcomes for students. It means less absenteeism for workers. Those are just some examples of how we all benefit when everyone is included.
So it's kind of a cost-benefit analysis. It obviously costs the state to take care of undocumented workers, immigrants, residents in this way.
Right. Well, part of our research is related to a proposal that's under consideration in California to expand Medicaid to all low-income Californians, regardless of immigration status.
Is this Senate Bill 4?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So Senate Bill 4 would expand Medicaid and would also allow undocumented immigrants to purchase coverage through the state marketplace set up under the Affordable Care Act with a federal waiver. So that has to be approved by the federal government, but that's the proposal. And our research found that actually the most costly services are already being paid for by the state and federal government. Under a longstanding federal policy, undocumented immigrants, if they're low income, are eligible for pregnancy-related and emergency services. And our study found that those services account for 60% of the costs of comprehensive care. And so with just a little bit more investment, California could, you know, give undocumented immigrants to the preventive health care they need and the routine care that will, you know, lead to better health outcomes over the longer term.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about a recent study ranking Ohio at the bottom amongst of all 50 states in how it in its policies and state laws regarding health and well-being issues for undocumented immigrants. Joe Mas, there's about 100,000, roughly 100,000 undocumented residents.
According to the Bureau of the Census, yeah.
Right. And of course, that's we don't know. I mean, it's not a firm figure, but all things being equal, my last guest said that he doesn't think necessarily Ohio has done anything particularly it hasn't been a statement about undocumented immigrants by not doing anything and enacting these laws like they have in California, Texas, and other top states.
Exactly. And in many of these areas, in the areas of health and particularly in education, you have to the state has to affirmatively act in order to be able to improve the situation for in both of those areas. And I think your previous guest, Dr. Wallace, suggested that. But I think the real issue here is the surprise. We were all surprised that Ohio would
right.
be dead last.
That's why it's man bites
in fact,
dog, right.
behind Alabama and Arkansas and those states that have a history with respect to civil rights. And I think the reason is that there is a disconnect between the population of the state of Ohio, in other words, the people with whom you interact on a day-to-day basis, and what happens in the General Assembly. There is an overrepresentation of legislators that self-identify as being conservative versus those at about a 2-to-1 margin. So I think that much of the lagging behind in policies relates to that.
But you don't hear a lot of politicization of the issue. They don't bandy this about. They don't wear it necessarily as a badge of honor. It's mostly they're ignored.
They're ignored. And it comes and goes. I think
yeah.
that going back, if you go back to 2006, 2007, which was the previous to the last time that there was a serious effort to advance immigration reform, mm-hmm. you did see things in the General Assembly. I think that was around the time that a bill was introduced to affirmatively deny workers' compensation benefits to somebody that may have been injured or killed on the job. And then you saw the emergence at that time of perhaps other bills, some of which may have passed, some may not have passed, but it comes and goes.
As you mentioned, Laurel, Lucia, Democratic Governor Jerry Brown in recent years has signed several landmark pieces of immigration legislation, including bills to allow undocumented immigrants to obtain driver's licenses and practice law, which is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Massive interest in the driver's licenses surprised state officials. I think some, at least at the last count I had, was about 500,000 people applied for them. State officials and supporters of this policy were worried that eligible drivers would not apply for the driver's licenses because of deportation fears. And I was wondering, why shouldn't they fear deportation? What sort of safeguards are there for any of these policies when an undocumented resident applies for them?
Right. I don't know a lot of particulars about the driver's mm-hmm. license protections, but I do know that a lot of the immigration advocacy groups in California were very active in developing the specifics of the policy and in making sure that, you know, immigrants could be as confident as possible in providing their information to the government. On the healthcare side, there's been a lot of focus in California on what's called mixed status families, families where there are undocumented immigrants and citizens or legal immigrants in the same family. And, you know, in those families, even the citizens and legal immigrants in some cases are afraid to apply for Affordable Care Act benefits because they're worried it will have negative implications for their family members. And in that case, you know, the federal government has said if you're providing information for healthcare coverage purposes, it can't be used for immigration enforcement purposes. But understandably, there's still a lot of fear, and even hearing that message, you know, doesn't alleviate the fear every time. And so I think it will be a kind of long-term effort to let undocumented immigrants know the specifics of the policy and where the risks are. And over time, as more and more people participate, I think people will feel more comfortable when they see that there haven't been negative consequences for providing information to the federal government.
Yeah, and can I contribute
a
little
government.
More? And
Joe Moss,
I appreciate Laurel's comments. If I can contribute a little more with respect to the driver's licenses and benefits related to that, there is a significant segment of this target population that is afraid of any contact with the government. But the reality of the contact with the government is that almost all of the cases where individuals end up in the hands of Immigration and Customs Enforcement is as a consequence of the criminal justice system. And by that, I'm addressing that broadly. For example, being the victim of an automobile accident.
As much as being a victim as a
perpetrator.
Yeah.
That you are then given a ticket for driving without a license. And in many of Ohio's 88 counties, that will land you in the county jail, even if just for a few moments. And then because of the Secure Communities federal program, immigration authorities are alerted, and then they're put into the system. So obviously that would bleed over into a general fear of the population. But once the population is better educated, they will then not hesitate to apply for a driver's license, so long as they don't present any documents that are false or anything like that. But so it's a wonderful, unbelievably positive move that California has advanced.
I guess if so many of these health and well-being policies are being brought out and extended to the undocumented population, people are going to ask, what's the difference? Why bother for legal immigration if all of these benefits are extended when you're undocumented?
Is your question why proceed to lobby for legal immigration? And you know, that's an interesting thing because I do have clients, and as you know, I'm a criminal defense attorney. Mm-hmm. I do have clients that probably would not bother in the event that a path to having a driver's license and having some sort of a health card. And so on would be advanced. But those would probably be the older population. I think with respect to working families, which is the vast number, really, and certainly with respect to the kids in school, there's no question that they would apply. They want to be, quote unquote, legal.
Laurel?
Yeah, and there's even in California, there are still many benefits and programs and securities that undocumented immigrants do not have. But even if all of those were extended, I think a big thing that's missing is just a sense of security. So, for example, with the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program for undocumented immigrants who arrived as children, mm-hmm. You know, even though that program has given many Californians work authorization and temporary relief from deportation, both of those benefits are temporary, and there's a stress in not knowing what's going to happen if a new president is elected or, you know, if the winds change. And so fighting for a path to citizenship, I think, is partly motivated by, you know, wanting a longer-term sense of security.
Steve Wallace from the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research, whom I interviewed earlier, said that these kinds of policies don't necessarily translate per se into increases in immigration, undocumented immigrants in a state. Joe Maas, so that's a fear of a lot of people.
Yeah.
Why would we do this? Because
it's
means
interesting.
Just going to
no,
bring more people.
If I were to draw you a pie chart that has a slice, and that slice is why should I be in Ohio? I think we can see a slice that maybe is 15% of the pie that may have something to do with immigrant-friendly policies or policies to support the undocumented community. But 85% of the reason for being here is usually because there is work here. We've seen growth in the last month or two in the construction industry again, and that was the original
impetus. Even though it ranks at the bottom in terms of these policies.
And now, and that's something Laurel mentioned several times already in this conversation, they have hybrid families where, in fact, the brother and the sister and the mom and the son and the daughter and the wife, some of them are probably American citizens, probably born here. So they have set roots in the community. And that's not necessarily going to be a draw for additional immigrants coming here. The only thing, in my opinion, that would draw additional undocumented or additional immigrants, documented or not, would be the availability of resources, that is, jobs, not necessarily government benefits. None of these government benefits that we've discussed or that were included in the UCLA report have anything to do with money on the barrel for these families. But they focus around well-being, and health.
Laurel, Lucia, I know you specialize in healthcare, but can you give me any insights into why the legislation or the new law allowing undocumented immigrants to practice law was passed in California? What was that about?
I don't know a lot of specifics about that bill, but I do know that there has been a big campaign in California to be more inclusive of undocumented immigrants. And part of that has included a lot of undocumented youth and young adults very publicly and courageously sharing their stories with the public.
Okay.
Through advertising, through the media, and I would guess that there were probably young adults who, you know, were in law school or wanted to go to law school, who really advocated for that bill.
Joel,
I can tell you, I think I know why. Prior to the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the DACA program, I can tell you that the children of my clients who were in high school, as soon as they could go to work, they would drop out. And oftentimes they would come as families to my office, and I would ask, why did you drop out? And he says, what's the point? I could not go to college at that time, and there is a bill to bring us back to that time. You couldn't enroll in college unless you enrolled as an international student, which meant not only that you didn't have in-state tuition, but that you had to pay additional fees as an international student. And they couldn't afford that. DACA came in as a surprise out of nowhere, and as a consequence, many of these young people are now going back or pursuing their GED.
In Ohio?
In Ohio.
Because DACA is a federal.
That's correct. DACA was executive action on the part of of President Obama, and it allowed the kids to now have a hope to stay here. So now they're looking beyond tomorrow in order to figured out what to do with the rest of their lives and are discovering that. So I think that California was anxious to do that, to give hope to the young people and say, stay in school, because if you do and you graduate, we're going to allow you to be licensed. We're going to allow you to have a job. And we're certainly going to participate in the national dialogue in support of comprehensive immigration reform.
Joe Mosh, you're going to stay with us. Laurel Lucia, a policy analyst at UC Berkeley's Labor Center. You are not, and I want to thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Bye. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about how Ohio ranked in a recent study of states' policies regarding the health and well-being of undocumented residents, undocumented immigrants. Ohio ranked last. We've heard from a policy expert in California, which ranks at the top in the recent study done by UC Global Health Institute and UCLA, measuring those policies. There are differing opinions about what such a ranking means, however. The Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. opposes policies that embrace and help assimilate undocumented immigrants in the U.S. Joining us now is Mark Krikorian. He's executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Welcome, Mark.
Well, thanks for having me.
Also still with us is Joseph Mas. He's counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Mark Krikorian, we've heard about the advantages to states when their health and well-being policies extend to undocumented immigrants. What are the disadvantages, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, the big disadvantage is that it formally incorporates illegal immigrants into the institutions of our society. I mean, it serves to erase, I mean, the goal is to erase the difference between people who are lawfully authorized to be here and people who snuck in or who overstayed their legitimate visas. And if we want to have a sort of defensible, sustainable immigration system, it's imperative that we maintain the difference between legal and illegal residents. Now, at some point, in the future, some significant share of the illegal population were probably going to end up amnesty, giving legal status to. I'm actually for that. I don't like it, but, you know, you can't unscramble the egg entirely. But that is not even an appropriate topic for discussion until we fully have in place the systems we need to make sure that we don't have another 10 or 12 million illegal immigrants 10 years from now. And essentially this is trying to steal a base, if you will, trying to get to the de facto legalization before or even in contradiction to the enforcement methods we need to make sure we're not in the same boat, a few years in the future.
You use the phrase unscramble the egg, which is very appropriate. I mean, there's already, I think as in California or Texas, 10% of the population is undocumented immigrants. How do you, and the argument there in those places, in Texas, it's a little more historical. In California, it's very much economic that they need to support these people because they represent such a large percentage of the workforce, and kids in school and unhealthy kids and unhealthy workforce is bad for everybody.
And, you know, I mean, there's two points I'd make. One, that's what happens when the very groups arguing or you know, sort of holding up a report like this have succeeded in preventing enforcement of the immigration law up to now. In other words, we're in this position precisely because of the advocates that point to this report as imperative. It's almost like someone who kills his parents and then appeals for mercy because he's an orphan. This situation is created, has been created by the very forces that are saying we now have to legalize in various ways the illegal immigrants. And the second point I'd make is that when you look at the report, I haven't studied in detail, but I looked over the executive summary. Mm-hmm. Some of the things included in this calculation of well-being are whether or not there is enforcement of the immigration laws. So I won't get into the weeds with something called secure communities, which is a lowest common denominator immigration enforcement system. So when a person is arrested, mugshot, fingerprints, the whole thing, real arrest, not a traffic ticket, that he's checked with immigration, and if he's an illegal immigrant, he's supposed to be removed. That is considered by this report as a negative, a demerit for the well-being of the illegal immigrant population. Well, in a sense, that's true, but, again, they're trying to steal a base here by saying efforts to enforce the law are bad for illegals trying to live here. Yeah, that's true. In fact, that's a tautology.
Joe Moss?
Well, yeah, and Anne and Mr. Kerkorian, you know, the interesting thing is that I happen to agree with much of what he said, because in reciting the assessment of who the population is and that there are, in fact, the eggs already have been broken, you can't unscramble them, is, I think, very, very valid. But a point that keeps coming up in Mr. Kerkorian's assessment is that the states perhaps should not be engaging in advancing these measures. I mean, somewhat in disagreeing with him, but I think that the point that I would like to make is that I do think that this is in the federal sphere. And I think if it's going to be fixed and it's going to be corrected in a comprehensive way, it can only be through immigration reform, and only the federal system can do that.
Because part of the egg scrambled scenario is that all the states have different policies, and the fact that there's a ranking in the first place, Mark Kerkorian, is that a problem?
Well, yes and no. I mean, first of all, there's going to be a variety of policies in certain areas from one state to the next. There are welfare eligibility differences, for instance, even with regard to lawful immigrants. So there's always going to be some variation. But you're right in that that there is often too much variation. Unfortunately, what we've seen under this administration is that when state policies are different, but tend to support federal immigration law, tend to try to help and buttress the federal government's statutes against illegal entry and illegal residence, that those states are punished, whereas states that violate federal immigration laws and I include here California and a lot of states, they are actually supported by this administration. And just as one quick example of that, federal law requires any state that gives in-state tuition to illegal immigrant students to extend that same taxpayer-funded subsidy to all American students from out of state. And all the states that give in-state tuition simply refuse. It's like nullification. South Carolina before the Civil War refusing to recognize federal law. That's what California and other states are doing in defying federal law with regard, in this particular instance, to the in-state tuition rule. And those states are not only never sanctioned by this administration, they're, in fact, encouraged.
Well, were they sanctioned by the previous administration?
Sometimes they were, yeah. Not as thoroughly as they should have been, because the Bush administration, frankly, was very much in support of the same kind of so-called comprehensive immigration reform as the Obama administration is.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that at least in my study of the subject, I have not encountered the support and punishment assessment that Mr. Kerkorian is advancing. And I am unaware that by advancing in-state tuition to children who now have Social Security cards pursuant to Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the DACA program, that somehow that opens the door to offering in-state tuition to out-of-state American students.
No, no. It's offering in-state tuition to students who are themselves illegal immigrants, do not have Social Security numbers. That's what California does.
And I think Texas may do that as well. Am I not correct?
It might. Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mark Kerkorian, there is not any evidence that I've heard of yet that suggests that these more liberal policies toward undocumented residents actually attract more illegal immigration.
Well, that's a hard thing to study, and it has been. I mean, certainly government's not interested in studying it, but there is, in fact, some indication that that's true. For instance, Tennessee became one of the first states to offer driver's licenses to illegal immigrants. And under federal law, that's allowed, but it has to be a distinct, they call it a driver permit or certificate, so it has to look different and be different and can't be used for purposes of ID, even though it always is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they found was that when they did that, thousands of illegal immigrants from out of state were coming in and pretending to be Tennessee residents to get these driver's licenses, and Tennessee actually stopped doing it because it was becoming such a problem for them. So, it does seem that there is, in fact, some effect of attracting or facilitating illegal residents when state policies are different.
Yeah, but there's a distinction, and I think that you will agree that these individuals were actually not moving to the state of Tennessee. They were applying for driver's license to the state of Tennessee in order to be able to return to their state of residence and offer it, which, by the way, at least according to the laws of the state of Ohio, wasn't going to help them anyway, because if you're here for 30 days, you're supposed to get an Ohio driver's license. But it was an idea.
Look at another example. Virginia and Maryland are right next to each other, and the suburbs of Washington overlap too. When Virginia adopted, and not just Virginia, but specific suburban counties in Virginia adopted much tougher policies with regard to illegal immigrants, there was, in fact, a measurable outflow of residents into Maryland, which was much more, liberal, if you will, on these kind of things.
Which I think is a really important – I think that's a very important distinction, Mark, too, because it's one thing to have a laissez-faire attitude and not – be enforcing not have these maybe what be perceived as positive policies toward undocumented immigrants, but it's another thing to be enacting policies that are punitive. That is one thing that I'm not sure of. I haven't seen anything about that other than what you just said in Joe Moss.
You mean in the state of Ohio?
Well, anywhere. I mean that if you have more punitive policies, you have fewer
undocumented immigrants that will leave the state.
Yeah.
Yeah. There seemed to have been some indication that maybe in Alabama, Alabama attempted to advance a an anti-immigrant kind of thing. And they ended up arresting an executive from Mercedes-Benz.
Oh, that's right.
Built their plan. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Uh,
Arizona, though, for instance, before that very celebrated legislation, they passed an earlier bill requiring employers to use the federal government's E-Verify screening system when you hire people. And what they found is that there was researchers in California found something like almost a 20% reduction in the illegal population, and the Mexican officials in the state of Sonora, which is on the other side of the border from Arizona, were screaming and howling and saying that Arizona was overburdening their social service systems by sending these Mexican illegal immigrants back or inducing them to go back. So, you know, people respond to incentives. Nothing's perfect. It's not a switch. You turn it on, you turn it off. But incentives matter, and the state and local and federal policies all figure into the incentives that illegal immigrants either use in deciding whether they should come in the first place or where they should live and whether they should return to their home countries.
But I think that Mr. Kerkorian is helping me to make the point that I made in the previous segment, and that is what really drives the population is the availability of work and the availability to get a job. And
which
I'm wondering,
why,
in Arizona, if you may not have had a switch from employment, in other words, generating a Social Security card and applying for a job, and then maybe creating their own businesses, because that's something that is a phenomenon that you see in all the states that I'm aware of individuals that are blocked from getting employment, and they in fact then start their own businesses and apply for employee identification numbers.
Mark Kerkorian, what about hybrid families? You said that, you know, when someone gets pulled over, they're arrested on a criminal charge, they're found to be undocumented, they're sent back. But there are rules and regulations against that in some states because they may be the head of a family or the member of a family, a hybrid family. May be responsible for someone who's depending on them.
Two points I'd make about that. One, again, this is what happens when the groups both on the left and on the corporate right get together and prevent enforcement of the immigration law for so long that people, illegal immigrants living here, the birds and the bees, they end up having kids. You know what I mean? In other words, first of all, this should be an object lesson for us to reject the corporate and left-wing alliance in preventing future immigration enforcement, number one. Number two, you know, children often pay the price for their parents' mistakes. If you, you took out a loan you can't pay and you get evicted, your kid doesn't get to stay. You have done this to your child. And frankly, if American-born children are, they have a parent who's an illegal immigrant, first of all, they can go with the parent back home to Mexico or Central America. They're fully prepared to do that. They're allowed to do it, and they can come back anytime they want as a U.S. citizen. But the point is the onus here is on the illegal immigrant parents who did this to their children. They are morally culpable for these actions, and it's not the responsibility of the American people to clean up the mess that these people who are adults and are responsible for their actions created in the first place.
Well, Mark Kerkorian, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Mark Kerkorian, he's Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C., and Joe Moss, Counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition, thanks to you as well.
Pleasure, Ann.
And thanks for listening. This program was produced by Shahina Sagiri, and I want to thank the All-Side staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, the All-Side's interns Michael Hepburn, Shahina Sagiri, Hannah Palmer, Abdul Rahman Al-Ruweishan, and with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks again for listening. This is All-Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.